Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 22nd, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, thank you, Graham. Spring is in the air.
Oh, wow, good. It's been like the weather has not been spring-like in Paris, so that's good to hear. Hopefully it's coming our way soon, but yeah, I cannot wait. And I know the U.S. changed clocks recently, so they're probably definitely feeling very spring with those late evenings, but soon it'll come our way in Europe, so we will see. Tell me about last week. I mean, I could not even keep track of the number of LiveWire entries that were coming in last week as all these schools were dishing out decisions. So yeah, who gave out decisions last week? What do we have to go on this week? Because it's another busy week, right?
Yeah, we're in the thick of what we call internally anyway, decision weeks, where you know, the bulk of the top schools released the decisions per round, all in a concentrated time frame. So we're in round two decision weeks as we speak. So last week, I mean, Ross was one of the big hitters that, you know, rolled out phone calls Monday and Tuesday, then released decisions on Wednesday. So lots of conversation about Ross. But Ross wasn't, you know, they weren't on their own, other schools releasing decisions. They don't come top of mind now, but I know there were several others. I got to remember Booth, right? If I'm going to talk about Ross, I got to remember Booth. But yeah, no, it's exciting. But this week, it's going to be no less frantic and frenetic. So Kellogg is one of the big hitters this week, scheduled for Wednesday. But again, these schools typically, some of them anyway, you roll out sort of phone notifications earlier in the week. So Kellogg Wednesday, Wharton, big hitter, Wharton on Thursday, along with Haas, McCombs, Goizueta, and Yale's in the mix too on Friday, I think. So
yeah, that's right.
This is going to be a hugely busy week. So to celebrate that, Graham, what are we going to do? We're going to be on Clubhouse.
Yes. Yeah, we have formed a club on Clubhouse that's called the MBA Admissions Club. And on Thursday at noon Eastern, so that's March 25th, noon Eastern, we're going to get on Clubhouse and we have an event in the MBA Admissions Club. And we're going to talk all about round two decisions and take questions. I'm hoping that other people from the industry jump on. We're inviting kind of anyone and everyone, and hopefully it'll be a fun discussion. And, you know, if people want to reach that room, you can just go to bit.ly/MBA Clubhouse. You do need an iPhone to download the Clubhouse app. But yeah, that should be fun. I don't know, what do you have planned? Like, is there anything you're hoping to discuss in particular beyond what I just mentioned?
You know, I think, like I say, this is the first time we're doing this. So for us, it'll be a bit of a test anyway, just see how the conversation works. But frankly, I mean, again, we're in the midst of decision weeks for round two. So we'll be talking about who's releasing decisions this week. We'll be talking about some of the feedback that we've seen on LiveWire as a result of those decision releases. I would imagine there'll be some conversation around what happens now. I'm on the wait list. What can I do over the next several months?
Yeah.
And sort of making decisions. Maybe you've got two choices now, and let's talk about those choices and how you think through one school versus another, or whether you should be reapplying. There's lots to talk about. Quite honestly, if we're going to start a club and start an event on Clubhouse, you couldn't get a better week than this week, I think, to kick things off.
Yeah.
A promotion. I'm like talking like a promoter now, but I really, I mean, we are in the thick of it. So let's have a conversation over there. We'll have one here. We'll have conversations everywhere.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to maybe getting a chance to hang out with some of the regular listeners of the podcast. So yeah. So if you're on Clubhouse, tune in, come on by. It should be fun. And speaking of events, though, today at noon Eastern, we're doing a Tuck chat. I mean, I'm not doing it, but the Tuck Admissions Committee is going to be on clearadmit.com in the Tuck chat room. And I think you have to register for that, but you can just jump on over to that chat room. I think you can register there. So yeah, lots going on this week. I did want to mention, look a little kind of backwards into the past and mention that, I don't know if you remember this, Alex, but in episode 122 of the podcast, we featured a woman who was working in consulting, but with a kind of public policy and government type angle to the consulting work. And, you know, she had posted to ApplyWire, was looking for feedback. She had a 3.3, you know, GPA and a 760 GMAT. And And, you know, we kind of encouraged her, and she was a little concerned because she was sort of a non-traditional candidate and also wants to head into, you know, kind of social impact type work. And enough said on her, but I was pleased to report or to see on Livewire that she posted that she was admitted to Michigan. And I guess she said, got the call, was told that I'm a Dean's Fellow, full tuition, and a Forte Fellow. And she mentioned that I should also say thank you to Alex and Graham for the vote of confidence back in the fall. They covered my non-traditional profile in Wiretaps 122. So that was just awesome to see. I think you were the one that spotted it, right? So just really cool feedback.
Yeah, has she aimed high enough, Graham?
That's a good question. I don't know where else she got in. And that is a good question. But man, full tuition.
I mean, Ross is a fantastic school. Don't get me wrong. You get a full ride at Ross or whatever it is. That's absolutely brilliant. But the reason why I ask that is if Ross is giving this candidate a lot of money, they're obviously trying to incentivize her to come. It'd be interesting to see if she actually applied to M7 programs that would then make her choice a little bit more challenging. I mean, you said she got a 760 GMAT. I mean, this person's wicked smart.
Yeah, and I remember I did peek at the original post before we got on the air.
Right.
And I feel like there was a range of schools. I cannot recall, though, off the top of my head if they were M7 or what. But again, I mean, full tuition, Forte Fellow.
You usually prep really well for these conversations, Graham. I'm pretty surprised you didn't do bit of digging, but
yeah,
there we
anyway,
go.
Yeah, anyway, one of those days. But yeah, she, fantastic results. You can't really argue with it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
If people continue to want to reach out to Alex and I, in addition to jumping on the Clubhouse with us on Thursday, you can always email us at info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps to catch our attention. Alex, we're going to get into the wiretaps portion of the episode with the profiles that you've picked out. But I did want to mention a couple of things over on the website. Mauro Guillen, who's a really great professor at Wharton, who was even there when I did my MBA, is leaving Wharton to go become the dean of Cambridge Judge. So huge grab for Cambridge Judge. But we did an article on that. And he was actually also on the podcast with me talking about COVID back in the spring. I want to say it was episode number 90. I'm probably getting that wrong. But he's a great professor. He's one of these guys that wins the best professor of the year award every single year. So great professor. And I'm sure he'll be a great dean. And again, hats off to Cambridge Judge for stealing him away from Wharton. I don't know if he was, do you remember him, or I don't know if you interacted with him?
I don't remember him. Okay. I know Wharton's just chock full of fantastic teachers. But it also seems like Wharton's becoming a pretty good feeder school for deans at other top programs, right?
Yeah, that is a problem.
So there's the quiz for you, Graham. What other schools have gotten deans out of the Wharton School?
Ooh, actually, I know of a lot of, it's funny. The thing that I thought of first is I know that Yale poached away a handful of professors from Wharton, the Yale School of Management, not so long ago. And their names are escaping me. But one of them is there's a marketing person that left to go.
Yeah.
But deans, that's a good question. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, a recent Wharton dean actually went to USC, right? To the Marshall School.
Yeah, Dean Garrett. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So there's one of them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that's the price you pay.
That's all I know.
All right. The other thing over on the website, and this is crazy, I do not know how our team managed to put this together, but as our American audience knows, and probably some of our international audience, March means March Madness for college basketball in the U.S. And so we created a bracket of post-MBA employers. So, Amazon and Apple and Google and McKinsey, Bain, BCG, all the top employers that people tend to want to go work for. And we're allowing people to vote. There's going to be sort of head-to-head matchups, just as you have in the NCAA tournament. And so there are two things people can do. The first is you have until midnight tonight to get your bracket in. And that means you can go online, fill out a bracket where you predict the results of the competition. So who's going to be in the final four, et cetera. And then also in each round, you can vote. So you can vote to get us from, I believe we start with 32 post-MBA employers, and we, you know, we're going to go down to 16, the Sweet 16, and then the Elite 8, Final Four, all that stuff. So you can vote in each round. The place to go for the bracket is just bit.ly/MBA-bracket. And then if you want to go and vote in the first round, you can go to bit.ly/MBA-employers. So this should be fun. We'll just see how it all turns out. I have yet to submit a ballot. I did note in the fine print that apparently, Alex, you and I are not able to win the contest. And I should mention there's a prize, and it's a $200 Amazon gift certificate if you correctly predict the outcome of this employer battle and if you're chosen, because obviously if there's more than one correct bracket, we'll just pick one randomly from those that come in with the correct answer. But in any event, this will be kind of cool. I don't know if you're a basketball person. I'm going to say no, but I could be wrong.
I have been to see the Blue Hens play a couple of times.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes, go Fighting Blue Hens. I don't think they're probably in the in the tournaments, but
no.
The odd year they'll get in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went to Swarthmore College, and I that's a Division III, so we never even sniffed the NCAA tournament. But yeah, this is people get really into it, and so fill out a bracket if you're so moved, or at minimum vote, because the voting's fun. Like, I saw one of the early round matchups puts McKinsey against BCG, and I'm like, how's that going to go down? I mean, that's going to be a real tough battle. So we'll see what happens and who rises to the top in popularity. But in any event, enough said on that.
You were being very, very politically correct there, Graham. Have you not got an opinion on that battle?
Oh, actually, you know, it's funny. When I was in business school, I actually recruited at those firms, at all the, you know, Bain, BCG, McKinsey. Mm. And I had kind of a soft spot for BCG. Like, I don't know, it was a little bit of a different approach. McKinsey's, you know, pretty hardcore. I would almost say like a little nerdy in terms of who they look for. And BCG felt a little bit more like down to earth. So I wouldn't say, I don't know. It's a good question. I know McKinsey has the brand. I mean, it's like saying, you know, Harvard or something, right? I mean, McKinsey's got the top brand. But you never know. You know, you see, 16 seeds beating out the number one seed sometimes. So we'll see what happens in the bracket here. Let's move on and do our wiretaps portion, unless you had anything else this week.
No. Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. This person is applying to 9 schools. They've got Tepper, Johnson, Tuck, Fuqua, Ohio State, Rochester, UNC, USC, and Darden. And they want to start this coming fall. And they actually indicate in the notes that they've already applied to a handful, and then they're actually applying late round to the other half. They've been working on product management. They want to sort of pivot into a kind of tech, I think project management type role. And they'd love to work at Google, IBM, LinkedIn, Microsoft, or Twitter. GRE score is 309. GPA is a 3.16. They have 9 years of work experience, and they're located in Africa. They don't specify the country, but somewhere in Africa. Alex, what do you make of this candidate? There was actually a bit of dialogue and some input from our community on this, but you know, what do you make of this candidate and their numbers and the school selection?
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit challenging because there's a few things that stand out, Graham, not necessarily in a positive fashion for a candidate like this. The combination of their GRE and GPA, 309 GRE, GPA 3.16. We don't really know what sort of undergrad this is. I assume it's engineering, so maybe actually the 3.16 isn't so poor. But that combination is going to raise a bit of a red flag. 9 years of experience is interesting because that again is a bit of an outlier. But that could go either way. If this person shows real good growth and management and leadership and so on and so forth, which in their comments they suggest that they can, that might actually be a positive. But then on the flip side, they've really got to show fit and show that they understand what they're doing, their focus, their goals, and everything's all well developed, and they know exactly why they're applying to each of the individual schools and how they're going to get involved and so on and so forth. So that would be important. I'm a little bit concerned that they, you know, they've got 9 applications. They've already applied to 5 of these programs, but it looks like only the last week or two, and then the remainder are upcoming. So this is a late applicant applying from Africa. So I think that presents challenges in of itself. I would really feel a bit more confident if I really understood their goals and they really sort of forthright about planning on what they want to do. But I didn't get that necessarily, that sense, reading this entry. But that all said, they're not aiming too terribly high, I don't think. They're sort of aiming at the lower end of that sort of top 16 into that next couple of tiers. So quite honestly, I think, Graham, and we talked about this a little bit before we came on air, once you get out of that top 16 and that top 20, the numbers fall off pretty good in terms of, you know, a candidate like this actually ultimately becomes pretty competitive, I think. So it really depends how broad a range of programs they're willing to entertain. But certainly if they're looking at just outside of that top 20, then they may be absolutely in the sweet spot. They might surprise me. Maybe they're top 16, top 20, but it's going to be a little bit tricky, I think, Graham.
Yeah, I'm really worried about this candidate. And I think it's because it's that combination of, you know, their late round, which you just never, I mean, you don't really want to apply late in the first place, but right, the numbers almost get under the magnifying glass when you're late because, you know, a lot of schools, when they admit someone in the final rounds, they're kind of looking to maybe beef up their averages, not take them down. And so, yeah, I'm just worried that 1-2 punch of a 309 GRE and a 3.16 GPA gives me pause. Now, as you said, some of the schools that are more top 25, it could be in play. You know, these are schools that are by no means, you know, they're good programs, and they're actually, you know, they're probably looking for international diversity in the classroom. And this person's got, you know, 9 years of work experience in Africa. It sounds pretty interesting and promising in that regard. So that could play to their favor. I'm a little worried, but again, they are casting a fairly wide net. I would say get these apps in, see where the chips fall. And I mean, you know, if they have to apply next fall in the first round, worst case, I guess it's not the end of the world, although they'll have yet another year of work experience under their belt. So,
yeah.
But yeah, this is a tough candidacy because I'm rooting for this person. Like I can sense that they lead a team of 16 people at work. They've done impressive stuff. And, you know, they probably, I mean, just, you know, how many people working in Africa end up at, you know, I don't know, Rochester, UNC, like there probably aren't that many, you know? So it's they could add to the classroom, I'm sure of it, but it's just, I'm worried about the numbers and whether a school might feel that this is a too big of a risk.
Yeah. And again, just applying this late in, like if they were coming in the first round and I really got a sense of the goals and everything, then I'd be a little bit more bullish, I guess. But you know, I just don't get why you're applying in March, April with these numbers late in the game. It's just going to make things challenging.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, let's move on. I hope that person finds, you know, some success, yep, as they apply. And if not, you know, they can share their story on the site and we'll help them, you know, think about next season. But best of luck to them and thanks for that post. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 2. So this is an ApplyWire entry that we received. This person's got 5 schools on the target list, and they're wanting to start next fall. I believe some of these apps are already in process. They're looking at Cambridge, HEC, INSEAD, London Business School, and Oxford. So I guess arguably kind of top 5 programs in Europe. They've been working in the automotive industry. They are based in Austria, and I believe they're Austrian, and they want to get into consulting or maybe tech, or maybe auto or aerospace. They don't seem to have a full handle on exactly what they want to do post-MBA. They've listed a bunch of companies from the usual kind of consulting suspects to Tesla in terms of targets. 730 on the GMAT and a 3.34. This person also has a lot of experience, 9 years, and they want to end up in Europe after business school. And they mentioned that they've been working in the automotive industry with different roles, focusing on product development and product management, and they're leading a team currently of 8 engineers. So that's kind of the background. what do you make of this candidate? And, you know, they mentioned they want to do a one-year MBA, but yeah, what's your thoughts on this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right, Graham? I mean, they've got 9 years of experience, looks like pretty good experience. They've done very well and so on and so forth. I would argue, actually, they kind of have a pretty good focused sort of end goal coming out. In their second comment, they say post-MBA goal is to work towards electromobility and sustainability based on their technical background in e-mobility and so forth. So I think they've thought that through. So the one-year route makes perfect sense to me. You know, the more focused you are, the more prepared you are, the more sort of, I think, the more appealing a shorter MBA might well be, especially, again, the person's got 9 years of experience, so they don't want to put their goals on hold necessarily for longer than they have to. Looks like super experience. Their numbers are very good, 730 GMAT, 334 GPA, I assume, again, on from an engineering background. So no doubt that they're smart. If this person was applying to US programs, Graham, I mean, obviously, in that case, it'd be more two-year. I get that. But you'd definitely be suggesting they target the M7 caliber programs. So if they're targeting European schools, and that makes perfect sense for what they want to do, then it's the top European schools. Absolutely, that's where they should be aiming. And I think, yeah, mostly there's not much not to like about this person.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking, when I saw that GPA, I thought the exact same thing as you. They probably did a technical undergrad, and you know, there's not as much grade inflation in Europe. So my guess is 730, 3.34 makes them incredibly competitive academically. And the other thing I was like, oh, I bet MIT would love to have this candidate. And right. I actually commented that on their post, but they indicated, you know, they really want to just be in Europe and stay in Europe. So I get that. I did encourage them to think carefully about their school selection, even within Europe, because, you know, you've got Oxford, Cambridge, and INSEAD, which have kind of 1 year, or even in INSEAD's case, like 10-month programs. But then London Business School is a two-year program. They do have an accelerated track where you can complete it in like as few as 15 months. But I think not that many candidates manage to do that, in part because it's really challenging to sort of squeeze everything in, but also because many of the candidates that show up at LBS wanting to do that end up realizing that they're just going to have such a great experience that they want to stay for the full kind of 2 years. So, you know, and then the last thing I was going to mention is HEC is actually not a 1 year, it's a 16 month. It's kind of halfway in between the two. So just something for them to think about. But their response to that was that they, you know, they just want to go to the best if possible. And so they're willing to kind of relax that 1 year requirement if it's for a place like LBS or something. So I think they're going to get in, not too much to say. Do you think they have too much experience, or do you think that's not going to matter for, you know, these programs in Europe?
I think in Europe, again, on the 1 year side, that's not going to matter so much. What I would say is it doesn't matter how many years of experience you have. That sort of why now, in terms of articulating your plans and so forth, that why now getting the MBA, that's always going to be important. And as an outlier, i.e. 9 years of experience, that importance is heightened a little bit. So just as long as the candidate makes a good case for getting the MBA now, and how that MBA is going to propel them forward going forward. They don't need to justify getting the MBA now versus 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But what they do need to justify is why getting the MBA now makes perfect sense in their plan going forward. So think forward, but absolutely hit that point.
Yeah, agreed. And the only thing I was going to say is that they mentioned, you know, that they want to work, like you said, towards electromobility and sustainability. And that's kind of their background with like e-mobility and wanting to build on the business. But I wondered whether they would be best served like just saying that like right away post-MBA, they're either going to start something in that space or go work for a major automotive, maybe back to the one that they're working for now, but in a more senior role, versus doing the MBB thing. Because they list Bain, BCG, and McKinsey as well. And so I'm a little split. Like I think obviously if you go to a place like INSEAD, I mean, they're placing tons of people into positions with McKinsey, Bain, and BCG, so maybe it makes perfect sense. But I just wondered whether they could stand out more. But I think I'm okay with it as long as the long-term goal allows them to kind of gravitate back into this space. I think most people would understand the desire to do a year or two of consulting as a way to kind of hone the skills you pick up in business school, and then, you know, head off to do what they want to do.
Frankly, Graham, this is an engineer.
Yeah.
Going to business school, going back in ultimately long run manufacturing, engineering, automotive space. So I can see the argument for actually doing a consulting gig in, you know, with a specific focus on the automotive industry for a couple of years before going back directly into industry. Because clearly a consulting gig will give this person, you know, really help them round out their sort of business acumen and so on and so forth. And quite frankly, the space that they're in, automotive industry and targeting, is going to be in so much flux over the next 10, 15 years. I mean, what an exciting place to be. All cars have to get off fossil fuel.
Yeah.
So they say they're targeting e-mobility. Well, you don't have any choice.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be targeting e-. I think over the next 10 years, that industry is going to be so super interesting to be a part of. I mean, I can't be a part of it because I can't. Engineering would be way out of my comfort or whatever. But if you have a proclivity for that kind of stuff, absolutely brilliant. What a great place to be.
Yeah, it is fascinating to see over the years how different industries, you know, become more hotspots for MBAs, right? So, you know, obviously there was a period where, you know, working in tech and, you know, even finance, private equity, venture capital. But it seems like right now some of the big opportunities or places where things are in dramatic change are automotive, energy, and obviously healthcare with the coronavirus. Yeah. So it's just fascinating. And I think it's just also interesting to see schools, you know, some schools have great programming around this stuff. This person's going to land on his or her feet. So thanks for that post. And, you know, obviously keep us posted as to how it turns out if you're able to share. On the site, that's always appreciated. Alex, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a Decision Wire entry that we received from someone who is going off to business school this fall and doesn't know where they're going to go. They applied to Tepper, UNC, and UWashington Foster, and they want to work in tech. GMAT score 680. GPA 3.3, and this person's located in Korea. I'm assuming that's South Korea. And they don't know where to go. They've already been admitted to Tepper and UNC. They're still waiting on Foster, and it doesn't seem like there's any money involved. They did say in their notes that they say, "I'm a transitioning military officer, and I've been accepted at Kenan Flagler and Tepper, but I'm waiting to hear from Foster. And I'd like to use the MBA to pivot into general management or some form of marketing project management role in the tech industry. I have no geographic preference as to where I'll end up immediately after." So, Alex, what do you think? Where does someone go? I mean, right now, this person has offers at Tepper and UNC, but presumably they might end up with one at Foster, too.
Yeah, I mean, interesting candidate. I assume coming out of military, South Korea, everybody serves in the military, I think, for a year or two.
That's right.
So they might not be long-term military. Yep. Maybe they had some business experience beforehand. I can't remember exactly how that's structured. They've got great offers, right? Tepper and Kenan Flagler, both great programs, top 16. Top 21, I would call it, just outside of the top 16, but the next schools, right? Maybe along with Goizueta and McDonough and one or two others. Some would argue Tepper, if you're doing tech, Tepper would have a little bit of a leg up over Kenan Flagler, and maybe Kenan Flagler, if it was more general management, over Tepper. But these are very small margins. These two programs are absolutely in the same tier in my book. I would say Foster, whilst Foster focuses more heavily on the tech side, and definitely if you want to be in Seattle, then Foster's got to be a big player. But I would argue Foster's just slightly behind in that next tier. Although many would argue, and I think you're one of them, Graham, that Foster continues to make up ground on that tier above it and challenges. I think this is a difficult decision because these programs are very, very comparable. But I would lean Tepper. I like the parent university and all the ties there for tech.
Yeah, this is an interesting case. So I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball at you. Do you think this person's Korean? Because it occurred to me as we were like talking through their candidacy that the U.S. has a pretty heavy military presence in South Korea. I think there's a couple of bases there.
Yeah.
And so it occurred to me that, like, what if it's just an American officer that's, you know, transitioning from the military and coming back to the States for business school? We don't know, but would that change your point of view? Like, to the extent that if this person is Korean and maybe ultimately wants to go back there, does that change the way you look at this versus if they were American?
Frankly, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, it's a good question. And in often cases, it does matter, like personal circumstances. And if there's long-term geography in a different part of the world, it would matter. But I'm not sure. Let's say they're Korean and ultimately in the long run, they want to go back to Korea. Then, yeah, one of the things you would look at is what's the alumni network for Keenan Flagler and for Tepper in my country?
Right.
You know, is that going to have some influence in my choice? I would look into that.
Right.
I don't know the answer specifically.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is, if I do put it in that lens, like if this person is thinking of going international long term, like maybe back to Korea or anywhere in Asia, my suspicion is that Carnegie Mellon and their reputation in both engineering and technology, you know, may carry more weight internationally than the other two programs. But
yeah,
again, they would need to do their digging and look at, you know, what's the alumni network like in certain markets. As to the short term, this sort of pivot into tech, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Tepper's a nice place to land. Obviously, if they knew they wanted to work for Amazon or Microsoft and they love the idea of moving to Seattle, Foster starts to really eke out an edge, right? Because that's the market that they're in, and they place a ridiculous number of people into those companies because they're in their backyard, right? So it's an interesting quandary. Obviously, they don't have the acceptance yet from Foster, so it may not come to pass, but for now, it's a tricky question. And I think someone also pointed out in the comments that, you know, take into account location. I mean, Pittsburgh is a really nice kind of small city, but it's a bit more gritty, I guess, right, than maybe Chapel Hill in North Carolina, which is a bit more of a college town, small town type feel. So, you know, there are other factors too, but this is an interesting question. Do you think a tech company would readily take someone who's kind of coming from, you know, military and maybe not a lot of experience in the domain? Like, how does that work? Do you think that's a tough pivot?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, the other piece we don't really know is what's the undergraduate experience for this student?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's their training? I mean, if they're a hardcore engineer undergrad, why not, right? I mean,
yeah. You
know, if they've got the academic chops already in place and a little bit of engineering experience, that'd be absolutely fantastic. If they're coming from a more liberal arts, nothing wrong with liberal arts, Graham, I know you're all liberal arts fan, but I mean, that might change the conversation, but also might change the dynamic in terms of where this person wants to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, if they're an engineering geek, then maybe Tepper makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, so again, this person's, I mean, they're in a nice position to have to get to choose.
Yeah.
I think, you know, all these programs are really excellent. And you, as you correctly point out, I mean, UWashington keeps moving up in the rankings each year. It's a school that I don't even think people were talking about as a top 20 school when I first got into this industry, right? So, whereas now it's like perennially, you know, listed in the top 20.
They're 22, Graham. They're 22.
Well, but it depends on the ranking.
In my worldview, they're 22.
All right.
There we go.
but yeah, they and USC have been kind of making waves in that sort of group of top 25,
yeah,
let's say.
Yeah.
So very interesting stuff. Well, Alex, we've done it again. We're at the end of our time here, but I think, you know, we're both looking forward to catching up with people in person and in real time on Clubhouse later this week.
Yes.
And the last thing I wanted to just say is I'd really like for, if you're someone that listens to this podcast, I know we ask for reviews and ratings all the time, but I'm going to ask for something different this week. I just would like for you to tell one person you know about the podcast and try to convince them to listen, because, you know, that's what this is all about. We really want more people to get this message and to find the tools and, you know, just assistance navigating this process. And that's what we try to do each week by way of kind of case-based learning, using real applicants to sort of share insights. So please tell someone you know about the podcast. And otherwise, Alex, I guess I'll catch up with you later this week for our meeting on Clubhouse.
Very good. I like the way you said that, Graham, even though we're recording on Thursday, you confused the heck out of me. But yeah. Later this week, we will be on Clubhouse. Absolutely fantastic.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll see everybody in 1 week's time. Thanks again.
Take care.